I'm excited to spend time with one of my best people to know in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, and in sports radio in the Triangle, Mr. Errol Reese. He's a fellow Tar Heel and former football star, in fact, Hall of Famer at Alabama A&M. Mr. Reese, Errol currently serves as the founder and co-host of the very popular Sports Shop Radio on Buzz Sports Radio 99.3 FM in Raleigh. Welcome to If You Only Knew, Errol Reese.
Oh, man. Thank you. Dr. Stromer, I kind of call you D. Stro on this show. I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure I have to be so formal today, but no, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. Like I said, I said, no, you must have lost your Rolodex to get to me. But you know what? I'm honored to be on your show. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm honored to have you. Now, we have to start at the beginning. Tell us where it all started, where you grew up. And I do want to talk about your football career, as in why football? Because I know you're a very good athlete in all sports. And when did you realize you were really, really good at football and that's going to be the way?
Well, that's a great question. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, son of a steel worker and a teacher. And that's important because I got a lot from both of them, my mom and my dad. My mom being a teacher, back in those days, I'm not sure you probably remember this. Back in the day, if you were a teacher, you had status in the neighborhood. I mean, I'm talking about, my mom was the bomb, man. I'm talking about, her being a teacher and growing up in that environment was kind of cool. Only issue I had with that when she was actually was my teacher 1 year. That was my seventh grade year and the worst year of my life. She's my personal teacher. And she made an example out of me every single day. Didn't like that year, but outside of that, it was cool. I grew up in an interesting place. I grew up in a neighborhood that was mixed. We were like the third African-American family to move in that neighborhood. My neighbors on both sides were white, and that was the first time ever I grew up in Fairfield, Alabama, but then we moved over to Bush Hills, which I was in sixth grade. And that's where I really started growing up and learning about people. But it was interesting. That's where I really started learning about people that didn't look like me. I didn't go to an integrated school until I was in the seventh grade when my mom taught me. But that was interesting. But again, I had some clout because my mom's a teacher at that school, so that was kind of cool. I had a really good life growing up. You know, I can't give that story about, you know, I struggle and that kind of, I had a really good home environment growing up. Both of my parents were there, a sister and a brother. And I was right there in the middle. And it was a great place to grow up. I really enjoyed my formal years growing up in Birmingham, Alabama.
How about football? When did football start?
Well, football was always a love of mine. I always thought I was going to be a wide receiver, believe it or not. My initial favorite team was Kansas City Chiefs and Oakland Raiders. And the reason I picked those teams, because those teams were the first teams that had a bunch of people on their team that looked like me. And they had some guys from some HBCUs, one of the first two couple of franchises that really made an effort intentionally to go down to Grambling and Southern, places like that, to get those guys. So I was interested in that. So I wanted to be a wide receiver. There's a lot of guys, Elmo Wright, Otis Taylor, which he wore them 89 for Kansas City Chiefs. I wore 89 as a high school guy because of that. Short story, fast forward, when they timed some of the seniors out who were interested in maybe going to pro football and when I was in college, being an Otis Taylor fan, they had all the seniors out to run the 40 in case, you know, that was an interest for some pro scouts. And when I went out there with a couple of other my guys, teammates, Otis Taylor was one of the guys that was a scout for the Kansas City Chiefs. So that thing went full circle for me. But football was something that I just picked up from being in the neighborhood, and I was pretty good. I was fast. Ran around the neighborhood as a track guy and that kind of thing. So football became naturally, and I always wanted to be a wide receiver, and that's where I ended up being as I got older.
So tell me why Alabama A&M?
Well, it's an interesting reason. Believe it or not, basketball was my love. I love basketball. I really didn't like football. Wow. I can play basketball now. Football was something that I was good at, but I didn't love it. And
Now, you just say that so lightly. You're in the Hall of Fame at a college, and you just, it was okay.
Just imagine if I loved it, you know?
Yes.
To be honest, and this, I don't think I ever told them about this. A couple of things. One, they always interview people, Distro, at the end of the year about all the seniors and what do you want to do? What do you want to do? What do you want to do? And they asked me, I said, you know, I want to be drafted by IBM. That's what I told them. And I got drafted by IBM because that's why I ended up being in this area here. But I went there because I was recruited by a friend of the family that told me that HBCU would be the right place to go for me. I had my eyes on Southern Illinois to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And I went up there and it was snowing on the ground. I said, I don't want to come here because it's too cold. So A&M, which we grew up watching the classic with Alabama A&M, Alabama State, the match of the classic. So I was always interested in that. It was only an hour and 30, 45 minutes from my home. And I'm going to give a chance for my parents and father to see me play. So that's why I picked them. And they had a pretty good scientific program up there, mechanical and engineering, things of that nature. Wasn't sure that I want to major in that. It just sounded good when I was interested in going up there.
good choice. So we both share the UNC experience, which is really special. What made UNC Chapel Hill so special to you?
Well, you know, when I got here, working for IBM, and I always wanted to pursue my education further. I just thought, I looked at the business schools at the time. I looked at Freeway, I looked at Keenan Flagger, and being a Carolina fan anyway, growing up, I'll tell you that story a little later. I always wanted to just be part of that school. So I enrolled in the MBA program, and yet and behold, the second day I rolled over there, I met a friend for the first time, but really didn't connect until later after I won a basketball tournament, a 3-on-3 basketball tournament over there. That's how Phil Ford and I became friends almost 35 years ago.
Wow, I did not know that story, that you were out there bawling, and that's been your connection.
It's funny, it was a tournament for FCA, Federal Civil Christian Athletes.
Yes.
And Bucky Waters was the guy that put it on. We played in Wooden Gym.
Yes, my old stomping grounds.
Scott Stankavage was on the other team. We almost got to fight in that game because we were so competitive. You know Scott, right?
Absolutely.
But the winner actually had a chance. They gave us a little trophy and a steak dinner with Phil Ford. And going to that dinner, it's when Phil and I connected. Literally, from that point on, we've been best friends, which is kind of crazy to think about that.
Wow. That is an amazing story. I didn't know we shared Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I was a part of that.
Yeah.
And certainly balling in Wolin and having the football players come in and basketball players. One of my highs in Wolin Gym was being able to throw a fast break alley-oop pass for Rodney Rogers, right?
Oh, wow.
Who did a nasty slam. And I'll never forget that.
They used to tell me Lawrence Taylor used to be up in there playing basketball. Man, all those guys, football guys, used to be up in there.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful memories.
Yeah.
Let's take a break here and we'll be right back to discuss more with Errol Reese, the co-host of The Sports Shop. You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman.
Yeah.
All righty. We will
I'm sorry.
We're back. We're talking to Errol Reese. Errol Reese is a businessman. He is also the co-host of The Sports Shop. It's a wonderful, wonderful morning show talking about sports and culture. Errol, let's switch and talk about business. Tell us more about this show and how you manage all the different personalities that come on to your radio show.
Well, thank you for that, Distro. The Sports Shop is a labor of love, something we've been doing for 9 years. Never knew that it would evolve to where it is now. But when we started with one premise in mind, it's the same as it is today, is that let's be authentic. Let's not try to be like anybody else. Let's be different in a way where we just tell it the way we think it should be told and be unapologetic in how we do it. You know, hear me say, hi, welcome to Sports Shop. You never hear me go into that mode. I can go in that mode, but I don't want to go in that mode. I want to talk about it just like I'm talking to you today. So the Sports Shop is one of the few, if not the only, and I mean that seriously, we do the research monthly, one of the few African-American hosted sports star radio show doing drive time in anywhere in the world. And morning drive, that is. And people, man, you got to be kidding me, no. Unfortunately, that's a good thing and it's a bad thing. We should have more people doing what we're doing. But we are, through the grace of God and a lot of good friendships with Capital Broadcasting and with talented people like Dr. Strowman, we've been able to bring some talent to the airways here in Raleigh-Durham and over the internet vis-a-vis streaming. And it's something that we want to make sure that we give it to you in our own kind of way. Sometimes you're going to laugh a lot. Sometimes you're going to say, Sometimes you're going to say, I didn't really believe they could even do anything like that. Or I can't believe they got that person on that show. When we get those kind of reactions, then we have hit the mark of what we're doing. So I manage a whole lot of things at the same time. It's like an air traffic controller. You know, we're part of the branding, the programming sometimes the sales and marketing. It's on our backs, in particular on my back. And, you know, I got broad shows, so I look forward to doing that each and every day.
Well, it is a lot of fun. I try to be serious, but you all just draw it out and me to go a little different from time to time.
Well, let me say this, it's not because I'm on your show, I'm juicy up, but, you know, you're like a sister to me. I get so many comments about Dr. Strowman. And the response is, man, she's on point and she is tough. And they say that in a complimentary kind of way. Cause you know, I mean, you bring it. One of the things you'll give it to us in your own kind of way. You're not trying to hit anybody over the head with it, but you give it to us in a way where we get it. And people walk away saying, oh yeah, she's serious about what she's talking about. So right here, right now, I just applaud you and how you deliver your content to us each and every Thursday. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I definitely don't take it for granted being a regular on your show. But tell me about some of these best and worst interviews. What's something that made you just scratch your head? Like, what was that about?
it's funny. It's one of those, you know how it is. Just like sometimes in this, some things you can wing, some things you can't wing. So, you know, if there's some topics that you're very knowledgeable about, you can pretty much wing. But some things you're not that familiar with, you may stumble a little bit. But one of the interviews during COVID where we broadcasted from our homes and our producer kind of give us some of the topics. Well, this particular day, like for some reason, my laptop had just said, I don't know, it rebooted on me. So I had nothing to reference. And, you know, I'm trying to think, I had the mayor of somewhere coming on. I can't remember who it was, but it was, and when I'm trying to stumble, humble, and just trying to stretch until I get my laptop to come back up, it was bad. And I knew it was bad. It was bad. So, you know, case in point, I learned I got to have some backup when I'm doing things of that nature, either on my phone or if not on my laptop. So that was.
Make sure you're talking to friends so you can just freelance.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. But when you're talking to people for the first time and they have no idea, and you want to leave them with a good impression about your show, he probably walked away saying, man, these dudes here. You know what I'm saying?
What type of advice would you give to young people, you know, who want to be in sports radio? They want to hold the mic. What type of advice would you offer them?
Well, first advice is know your craft. First of all, I had so many people say I can do that. And a lot of people think they could do that. Do this. Mm-hmm. A lot of people out there, they can do what you're doing right now. But let me tell you, I've got some friends. I can't give them their names because some of them, they co-hosted for us one time. And this person just begged us to co-host. Let me co-host. And it came in studio when that red light went on. It was like he just froze. They just froze. When the pressure's on, you know, you're talking to people. You know this. You got your own show. It's a whole different flavor. So, but preparation, be prepared, and also be prepared if things go off the rails. Always, because you know, be prepared when things go wrong. You got to have something to replace it. And I learned that lesson too. For example, you know this, we interviewing people, all of a sudden things go dark. They're not on anymore. So what do? You got to keep it going. Because dead air on the radio, you know this, Distro, that's the worst thing in the world to happen. So always have some backup, some story, something. Always be able to be quick enough to recover. That comes with getting your reps in. That comes with being prepared. But that's my first advice, just being prepared and knowing that you got to learn this process. I'm much better than we was doing weekends. I used to try to do too much, and now I just kind of let the conversation come to myself and not trying to dominate all the time.
Yeah, great advice. I definitely don't want to dismiss the importance of quality relationships, right? So I tell my students all the time, it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you on a favorable basis, right? Because you can collect all the business cards, you could all this, but if the person won't pick up the phone or say, yes, I'll come on your show, you know, you've built quality relationships. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, but you know, if I wasn't talking to you, I'll stick my chest out. But talking to you, I mean, you're the relationship expert. But I will say this though, and it's been said before a couple places. I didn't know this until somebody told me the other day. But my net worth is my network, and I tell young people the ability to like have people know you and they like you.
Yes,
it's a big deal. I've been real lucky to have that skill with people through all walks of life. I moved this area in corporate America. I got that piece. I got the entrepreneurs piece. I got a sports piece. So I've been nurturing and cultivating those relationships. And people, knock on wood, think I'm an all right guy. I'm a cool guy because I try to treat people the way I want to be treated. And when you develop those kind of relationships, you can make those calls. Now, even to the point where I may not know the person that you know, Distro, but if I call you and ask you to call them, you're going to do it because you like me and you know me. It's all about who's asking the question, who's delivering the ask. And you know this, that's so important. So I tell people the advice is that try to build your network. And then there's some tools that I even talk to some kids about, how some tools and lessons that you can take with you to build that network. But you're big in that too, yeah. I don't compare to your network, but I mean, I'm a lowercase, you're uppercase N. I'm a lowercase N in the network. Well, it's all good.
Oh, I'm not going to let you get away with that. But I appreciate that. That is great, great advice. Let's take a break here and we'll be right back to talk to Errol Reese. You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman on 97.9 The Hill. We're back with Errol Reese and we are talking about his life, his journey. And now we want to transition to Errol. You've done so much in this space. You've been a wonderful role model. You have a wonderful network. And you continue to give back. But let's talk about your downtime. What are some of the things that you do to escape from the day-to-day grind?
Well, I call myself a singer, musician sometimes. I play the piano. Right. I love music, all genres of music. A lot of people, I am a, you know, people give me a hard time on the show, Dr. Stroman, about, you know, I like to go to Broadway shows, you know, musicals and stuff like that. That may freak some people out. Yeah, I like show tunes. I like things of that nature. But music is how I relax, and I love jazz in particular. If you give me a nice Miles Davis song, then I'm pretty much in heaven right there.
Well, I think we can agree on that for sure. And I know you're also active in giving back and making a difference. So tell us about a few charities that you work with and what is the why for you?
Oh, great question. Great segue. If people can see me now, I have a pink shirt on and it's in the month of October. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month and it's something that's near and dear to my heart. My mom is a 47-year survivor. And I have friends and people all over the world that has survived this disease. And my whole goal is to bring awareness to it, make sure that people know about it. And each and every day, even outside of October, I focus on breast cancer, but cancer in general, because cancer in general has affected. I lost a sister and a brother to cancer, and a father, actually. My mother survived, and thank God. And so anything that has the big C associated with it, I'm on it, and particularly breast cancer awareness for this month is at the top of the list. That's my why.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. I lost my best friend, my mother, to breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And so having you lead in this space for many men and women, but it's so, so appreciated as well.
Yeah.
So when it's all over and you're sitting in your rocking chair watching your favorite team play, if you reflect back on your career, What do you want people to remember you for?
Well, a couple of things. One is that, man, him and his wife, him and his mother's, let's stop that part. Ask that question again, Dr. Stoller.
Okay. When it's all over and you're sitting in your rocking chair and you're watching your favorite team play, if you reflect back on your incredible career, what do you want people to remember you for?
Well, his kids were somewhat the image that he wanted, the epitome of what he wanted his kids to grow up as citizens and just good people, education being foremost on their mind. And the fact that he was a real nice guy, he was kind and he was fair. And when people can say that about me, Dr. Stoller, I'll be so happy.
Well, I think they can definitely say that about you. I appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship. Likewise. Love how you connect people, and you do the job. You do it very, very well. So thanks again for spending time today, Mr. Errol Reese. Thank you.
This is so fun. I mean, again, I'm just honored, seriously honored to have you reach out to me and also have you call me your friend. I appreciate you.
You're listening to If You Only Knew with Dr. Debbie Stroman on 97.9 The Hill.